From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Senior government officials, business, and political leaders converged on St. Petersburg, Russia, where the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum opened on Thursday. Russia's President Vladimir Putin opened the event with a press conference, and we bring you excerpts of that here.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Good afternoon. It is my pleasure to see you here, to welcome you here. This year, my schedule of meetings with the guests of the forum began with this meeting, and I'm glad because we can have some practice during today's discussion, which will give me an opportunity to somehow maybe feel what it might be of interest for other partners, the partners who have come to the forum this year. And this is the end of my opening remarks. Now I would pass the floor to Mr. Mikhailov, and after that I'll be pleased to listen to each and every one of you and try to answer your questions as far as it's possible. Thank you very much, Mr. President. Your Excellency, Mr. President, thank you very much for giving us this opportunity within the tight schedule to meet with the leaders of leading world news agencies that amount to almost 90% of the whole news flow. Dear colleagues, I'm grateful to you for your interest in the forum in St. Petersburg. I'm convinced that today's dialogue will be just as bright and useful as all the six previous dialogues. It is the sixth time, by the way, that we meet here. St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, which has almost 21 years of glorious history, once again has been launched successfully this morning. We've had a panel discussion this morning. We discussed the role of media in global conflicts. As I've already said, we've come today here for the sixth meeting already. But there is one topic that is of interest for everyone, without any exception. Therefore, I would ask this generalized question on behalf of TASS. During the last meeting, we always started with stating the fact that our planet is going through a dangerous period of confrontation. Countries are exploding, regions are on fire, there are sanctions, trade wars, fake news. This is the contents of all news feeds, of all news agencies. Everyone is talking about a new Cold War. Each country is convinced that it knows who's to blame for sure. Why do we have in 2019 to begin our conversation from the same question? Why isn't the world getting safer? In which direction is our civilization going? Do you see the light at the end of the tunnel? What are we to do as the main participants of this political process? That is the generalized question that I have. If we have a look on the walls, on these frescoes, here on the ceiling and here on the walls, there is war everywhere, all around us. Unfortunately, this has always been the case. The history of humankind is full of conflicts. The truth behind all conflicts. However, after all conflicts, peace comes, but it's better not to come down to conflicts at all. So after nuclear weapons were invented and created, the humankind finds itself in the state of relative calm, except for regional conflicts. This state of relative global calm has lasted for almost 75 years. Let us recall Churchill, who first hated the Soviet Union, then he called Stalin the great revolutionist when he needed to fight Nazism. And after the Americans received nuclear weapons, got nuclear weapons, he urged for elimination of the Soviet Union. You remember his Fulton speech launched the Cold War. But as soon as the Soviet Union came into possession of nuclear weapons, Churchill initiated the coexistence of the two systems. And it was not because he was trying to adjust to something. He based his assumptions on the realities. He was a smart person, a politician. And not much has changed since then. We just have to bear in mind what world we live in, what are the dangers that we are facing. If we do not keep this fiery
Это же может привести к глобальной
animal
катастрофе.
Under control, this might lead to a global disaster. Everyone is now dealing with environmental issues today, and that is right, because this poses a global threat. I mean, climate change, anthropogenic, contamination, the boys and girls are now involved into this work all over the world, but they do not realize, these young people, teenagers, they do not realize the global threat and challenge related to possible global conflicts. And this is what the actually grown-ups should think about. But it seems that these issues and questions appear on the background now. They have receded to the background, and this can't but concern us. Our US partners withdrew from
систем противоракетной обороны.
The IBM Treaty.
Ну,
and so what?
Уважаемые дамы и господа,
dear ladies and gentlemen, I would like to ask you, did anyone of you protest actively against this? Did you go out to the streets with some posters? No. It's quiet, everything's quiet, as if this should have taken place. But it was the first step to a fundamental disruption of the whole backbone of international relations in the area of global security. And it was a very important step. So now we're talking about unilateral cessation of participation of our US partners in the INF Treaty. In the first case, the US was at least honest, just withdrew unilaterally. In the second case, maybe realizing that some responsibility would be involved, they're trying to ship the blame on Russia. But you and your readers, just have a look at the treaty, at the INF treaty. Just read this treaty. In article state clearly that launchers cannot be emplaced on the ground, that is of medium-range and shorter-range missiles, but they have placed them in Poland, in Romania. This is a direct violation of the treaty's provisions. Look at these medium and shorter-range missiles and compare them to combat drones. This is the same thing. Now, have a look at the characteristic of targets for counter-missiles. These are actually the shorter-range and medium-range missiles. And everyone pretends as if no one hears or sees anything, as if everyone is blind and deaf, but we have to respond somehow. This is obvious. And they're looking for someone who's guilty and blame Russia. The threat is serious, of course. What we have now on our agenda is extension of the New START treaty. Well, we can choose not to extend it. Our new system will ensure Russia's security for a significantly long historic term. I mean that we have taken an important step forward, and we've outrun our competitors in terms of creating hyper-weapon systems. So if no one is interested in extending the New START treaty, then we won't extend it. But no one is even negotiating it with us. We are ready. We've repeated it on numerous occasions, but there are no negotiations with us. No formalization of this negotiation process has taken place. And the treaty will expire in 2021. But let me draw your attention to the fact that there will be no instruments limiting the arms race. And, for example, placing weapons in outer space. Do we even understand what it is? Ask the experts. It means that above everyone's head, there will be nuclear weapons permanently, all the time. We're doing the same thing, and quickly. Will anyone think about this? Will anyone talk about this? Will anyone raise any concerns about this? No. What we see is complete absence of anything, or creating low-yield nuclear weapons, using strategic missiles in non-nuclear, equipped for non-nuclear weapons. For example, these missiles are launched from somewhere in the ocean. The missiles of strategic range, do we know? How do we know if they are nuclear-equipped or non-nuclear-equipped? Do you understand how dangerous this is, how serious this is? If another party answers, response immediately, what will this lead to? I'm deeply convinced this should be the subject of an open, transparent, professional discussion, and the world public should be a part of this process as far as it's possible. When we're dealing with such issues, people at least have a right to know what's going on in this area. But I'll reiterate again, we're ready, we're prepared for this, we are certain about our security and safety. However, we do share the concern of the possibility of dismantling this whole mechanism in strategic arms control and non-proliferation. This concern still exists. What is the way out of the situation? The only solution that we see is the joint work.
In
my recent conversation with President Trump gives me some reasons for optimism, because Donald said that he was also concerned about this. He understands what cost the United States bears and all the other countries. This money could have been allocated for some other purposes. I fully agree with him. For example, State Secretary has come recently to Russia. We met with him in Sochi, and he's shared the same ideas, more or less. But if the United States believes it so, then some practical steps should be taken to ensure this joint effort. I'll repeat.
Well, of course,
as for today, our negotiations are of utmost importance. I mean, the negotiations between the countries with the highest nuclear potential and nuclear capabilities. But I believe that we should involve all nuclear weapon states, official or non-official, if we only involve those who have been recognized as nuclear powers. If we do not involve those who have not been recognized as nuclear powers, they will continue developing the process and the process between officially recognized nuclear weapon states will be stalled. Therefore, we should build this broad platform for discussions and decision-making. And in this sense, this could be the certain light at the end of the tunnel. Thank you very much, Mr. President. The tradition goes that we treat women very carefully, and among the list of guests today, we have Ms. Rosalind Madison. The question will go first. I'll say that Ms. Madison is a well-known journalist and a political researcher. She's lived in Singapore for a long time. She's recently moved to London. She's become the executive editor of Bloomberg in 2018, and it's the second time she's here. And by the way, she's interested in Thai boxing, unlike Faina Raневская's joke that, the weaker sex means something like, the weaker gender means something weak indeed. Well, it tried to confuse me from the very beginning, speaking about boxing. Well, please, you have the floor, Ms. Madison.
Thank you, Mr. President. Muay Thai, I believe, has taught me the value and appreciation of fear and to confront and control fear, but I don't believe I'd be brave enough to get in the ring with you. I have a question about oil. Two questions, actually. Russia's deal with OPEC is up for renewal this month. Do you favour keeping production at current levels, or is your preference for Russia and for OPEC to increase output as we go into the second half of the year? And given the importance of oil to your economy and to Russia more broadly, I wanted to ask you about the comments this week by the US President Donald Trump, who said that he had been told that Russia is pulling its people out of Venezuela. Moscow has said that this is inaccurate. Is Donald Trump just getting bad information, or are you still concerned that the ultimate goal of the US is regime change in Venezuela, and perhaps the ultimate goal beyond that is to have control of Venezuela's oil assets? Thank you.
First of all, I would say that I wouldn't dare go out to a ring with you myself, not because you're a lady, but because everyone should be engaged with their own professional things. I have never practiced Thai box. I would go to a tatami with you, but I'll have some competitive advantages in this regard, I can assure you. As for your questions,
Что касается наших вопросов,
as for the questions you've raised,
well,
let's begin with the last question you asked about removing our people from Venezuela or not, whether we're afraid of a regime change or not. We are against any intervention into domestic affairs of other countries. We believe this results in tragic consequences. And an example of such countries as Libya and Iraq is the best confirmation of this fact.
Наилучшими пожеланиями, как говорится, выложена дорога в ад.
The road to hell is paved with the best intentions. This is a well-known idea and an obvious fact. So we should be calm, we should be patient. We can work with everyone, with opposition, with the authorities who are currently in office, but we cannot intervene into domestic affairs, internal affairs of other states. We cannot use sanctions measures because usually millions of grassroots citizens suffer from this that have nothing to do with authorities and government. The global economy suffers. If we take a look at the fact that Venezuela has reduced its oil production twice over the last year, if we take into account the state in which millions of people live now in Venezuela, so who is fighting whom? Are they fighting Maduro or are they fighting the population of Venezuela? Therefore, we do not approve of military intervention because this would be a disaster. As far as I understand, based on the information that I have, even the allies of the United States do not support military intervention into Venezuela. I do not know such people. I mean, neighbors of Venezuela, even those who condemn Maduro for domestic political processes. And that's good. We do not want anyone to do anything like this in Venezuela. As for our people in Venezuela, officially, we sold weapons to Venezuela, but we stopped doing that quite a long time ago. And upon contract, and you, by the way, represent Bloomberg, the TV channel, and the publishing house, which is involved in economic issues. We are to maintain, to service these weapons in terms of the contract provisions. That is what we have to do. Our specialists have been doing this over the last years, and they continue to do it. These are not all, not everything worked out technically based on priorities of the Venezuelan government. They wanted us to service something, and they wanted us not to service something, but this is something that we have to do based on the contracts. Otherwise, we will suffer some sanctions. Therefore, I know that a certain amount of work has been done by our specialists, not just in terms of military work, but in terms of industry as well. Some of them come, some of them go. We do not establish anything there on purpose. We do not establish any military posts there. We do not relocate our troops there. This has never happened before and will not happen, but we will continue to implement our contract provisions in terms of military and technical cooperation. My third point regarding our relationship with Venezuela and other oil-producing countries. I've already said that Venezuela reduced its oil production, and this is not only related to sanctions, it has to do with the current state of oil and gas industry in Venezuela itself. 3.5 billion are the credit loans of Venezuela in, towards Russia, but there is no debt. Venezuela has been paying and servicing all its credits, all its credit obligations and liabilities. As far as our relationship with OPEC is concerned, we will continue this relationship, we will continue to foster it. We're not going to enter OPEC, but we have a certain mechanism for cooperation with it, and our decisions will be consolidated. We do have certain discrepancies and differences in terms of different understanding of a just price, fair price, but this is also natural. There is no need for me to comment upon some things that you probably do not know, but just look what price per barrel
Саудовская Аравия.
In terms of what price per barrel the budget of Saudi Arabia has been calculated, this is much bigger than in Russia. We calculate in terms of $40 per barrel, and in Saudi Arabia this amount is quite larger. They want the price to be higher. We do not have this need, bearing in mind the diversified nature of our economy. Well, we do depend on oil and gas a lot, but our economy is much more diversified than in the Gulf countries. Therefore, our processing industry, the Russian industry, is not interested in too high oil prices. What we need is a certain medium shelf, $60 or $65 per barrel. We are quite satisfied with that. We do not have a need to go somewhere up. But even with this price, so we do have a considerable margin. I'm talking about the budget calculated from in terms of 40 barrels per barrel. Our gold and foreign currency reserves are filled. The reserves of the central bank and the government. Therefore, we should bear in mind all the conditions, all the circumstances, reduction of oil production in Iran. It fell by 1 million in Venezuela, problems in Libya, in Nigeria. We should bear all these factors in mind, as well as growing consumption in the summer period. We have certain arrangements now. I'm not going to get ahead of myself. I won't tell you right now what our idea is of what we should do in the second half of the year.
However, we're going to make consolidated decisions with our OPEC colleagues.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. President,
yesterday with President Xi, you opened a great concert dedicated to 70 years of diplomatic relations between Russia and China. You opened an exhibition together with TASS and Tsinghua that prepared for this major milestone. We also congratulate our Chinese friends with 70 years of People's Republic of China and like to present my our long-term friends and reliable partners of relations between Tsinghua and TASS, Mr. Zhang Minzhao. Mr. Zhai is taking part in this meeting second time. In 2016, you remember his interview, which was quoted a lot by many mass media of the globe. Tsinghua regularly takes part in St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. Now, I'll reveal a secret about Mr. Zhai. He has a dream about creating a quality coefficient about Chinese restaurants around the globe, just like Michelin stars. No one doubts the great expertise of the Chinese chefs, and I believe that the best Chinese restaurant is in Xinhua building. Mr. Zhai, your floor. You have the floor. In 2016, thank you very much, Mr. President. In 2016, in June, in St. Petersburg, I took an interview with you, and I still remember that time. I would like to thank you once again. Thank you. Yesterday, with President Xi, that they have visited an exhibition dedicated to 70 years of diplomatic relations between Russia and China. We know that this year, the motto of St. Petersburg Forum is ensuring sustainable development. We know that with your participation, Russian economy has tackled those difficulties which it has faced before, and right now, the economy is starting to bounce back. We would like to know what specific plans you have in mind about further rebuilding of Russian economy. Also, what plans do you have on strengthening economic cooperation of Russia and China? What are the key directions that you could outline? As for rebuilding Russian economy, you said it yourself. Indeed, we have overcome those difficulties that we faced several years ago. for several reasons, actually, that had to do with the so-called sanction actions. Well, that was not the main thing. That did not play the main role. But first and foremost, the decreased prices for our traditional exports, hydrocarbons, some metals, chemical production that had to do with raw materials, also some sanction pressure. Not only did we overcome the pressure, but we now are on the path to sustainable growth. That has to do with global economic climate, but not only with that. It also has to do
with
the domestic economic factors, as well as that has to do with the economic policy of the Russian leadership. First and foremost, that has to do with the stable macroeconomic situation. Last year, our inflation was four and something on annual basis, and this year we have something around five. That includes increased VAT tax. That's better than we expected. Why is this happening, and what do we expect? You probably know that we've made a decision to implement national projects in key areas of development. The main goal is to diversify our economy, making an innovative economy. That has to do with a whole range of targets and methods how to achieve these goals. These include improving governance in the economy
and
as a whole, governance and digitalization and governance in the economy, introducing artificial intelligence in all spheres of life and production. We're also working on in medical field and in biology, improving the quality of life of people, longer life expectancy, increased birth rate, a whole range of measures.
You could
just look at those goals that we're setting for ourselves, and you could see what we expect to have in the next few years. But in order to accumulate these resources, of course, we also mean building infrastructure, railroads, roads, port infrastructures. That means we also expect to engage investments, both national investment and foreign investment. Now, I'll talk about capitals. You probably are going to have a question about that. However, in order to ensure this investment, the state also has to put in as well, first and foremost, in the interest in the infrastructure, improving business climate. Well, I'll start talking, and that will be our only topic that we'll discuss. I have a lot to tell, actually. That's the thing.
And
in each area, we have some improvements. According to doing business rating, Russia was ranked 120 on the doing business climate, and right now we're ranked number 31st, and we can see that the apparent movement up. Right now we've made a decision to drastically change the rules that have to do with supervisory and controlling organizations. We want to close down all outdated rules that hinder development forward. We want to create a new system. So that will be the area that we're going to work on. That's the improvement of the business climate. Now, as for capital outflow and raising capital, last year we had a significant outflow. I think it was about 66 billion. However, the positive balance shows us that we have 131 1 billion. That covers that outflow. And we also have the return of that capital. We see that. So there is no tragedy here. We understand that it's a natural process.
Of course,
the participants
of the
business community, they expect one thing. They want to have certainty and stability of the situation. That's very clear. It's very apparent. We meet permanently
all the time with our partners, with
our European business community, and I hope we're going to have a meeting with our U.S. businesses. During the Obama administration, our trade went down from $30 billion to $20 billion. I believe that President Trump has a record on introducing sanctions. However, our trade has grown by $5 billion, and we also have increased trade with European countries. We meet regularly with.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.